You're tuned to the 8 o'clock buzz. Wisconsin's own singing protest, the Solidarity Sing-Along, by some accounts the longest-running singing protest in the world, may have sounded unusually jubilant recently. Last week, Dane County Circuit Court Judge Markson dismissed charges against Capitol protester and Solidarity Sing-Along participant Michael Kroot. On July 24th, Wisconsin Capitol Police arrested Kroot and cited him for conducting a rally without a permit under the state administrative code. Kroot and his attorneys, Jeffrey Scott Olson, contested the citation, claiming that Kroot was exercising his rights to freedom of speech and freedom of assembly under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. Judge Markson agreed with the defendant, not only throwing out Kroot's case, but also declaring the state code unconstitutional on its face. With over 300 similar cases involving singing protesters at the state capitol, all awaiting trial in the Dane County court system, Markson's ruling could have significant ripple effects. Joining us now to discuss the implications is Marquette Law School professor Ed Filone. Welcome to the 8 o'clock buzz, Ed.
Happy to be with you.
So what's your overall impression of Judge Markson's ruling?
Well, I think his ruling is absolutely correct, and it was, in fact, the only ruling he could have made. The precedent in this area is fairly clear. Federal courts have never upheld permitting schemes that reached as few as three or four people. They've always been hostile to such schemes. A brief review of the precedent would have revealed that, and from the very start, this administrative policy was headed for unconstitutional ruling.
Would you consider this a landmark decision, or is it simply just one in many similar cases?
Well, what I think it's very straightforward as a matter of First Amendment law. If you're going to require a permit before people exercise political speech, and it's going to be applied in a public forum, then I think that the precedent is clear. You need to have a really compelling reason related to safety or cost, and those safety and cost concerns don't apply to small groups of three or four people. So this administrative policy that tried to really clamp down on protests in the state capitol is not setting First Amendment precedent. But what it does clearly do is it reinforces the legal conclusion that the state capitol is a public forum, a place for protest. And I think it also, hopefully, will give the circuit court judges in our state a little more backbone to stand up to gubernatorial policies and executive branch policies that go way overboard.
So the state now was, for its part, was claiming that the court was looking at the wrong set of administrative rules. That that the rule that applied to as few as four people was actually modified by a previous case in federal court and the settlement that sort of upped that number up to 20. But the court rejected that argument. Why?
Well, I think Judge Markson was very clear on this. A judicial settlement does not modify any sort of administrative rule. Rules are modified by the Department of Administration. They can be modified by the legislature. And certainly, when the permit policies were first challenged in federal court and a preliminary injunction was issued against them, and then the parties reached a settlement on how those rules would be applied, that settlement binds the parties, but it doesn't change the rule. And the fact is that the rule as it still existed was still unconstitutional.
So if the state does amend the rule to turn it into an actual written code and raises that level up to 20, do you think the permit system under those circumstances would be constitutional?
Well, that's where it's unclear. And I think even in the federal court action, the court assumed without deciding that application to fewer than 20 people would be unconstitutional. But it was not a holding. It wasn't a conclusion that 20 was the magic number. And so I think depending on how the new rule would be written, and I certainly think we're now 3 years late on a new rule being written, no matter how it's written, I think the exact number will still be open to some debate. But once you get up in the area of 20, then the state does have an argument that with groups of that size, a permit would allow them to know it was coming, would allow them to put in place extra security, etc. There's at least a stronger argument that a permit policy would be constitutional, but it's not necessarily clear that 20 is the magic number, and depending on how the rule is written, we may see further litigation on that.
Now, the other thing that's obviously happened since during the court, since Crute was first arrested, is that there's been a settlement in the Kissick case, and there's now this notification system, which isn't quite a permit system, but groups larger than 20 can notify the same day that the Capitol Police that they're going to be there, and then presumably there's not an issue there if there's notice. Can you imagine that this notification sort of system might get written into the code, and how would that stand constitutional muster?
Well, I think that the notification system, as it applies to large groups, in my opinion, was a sort of a reasonable accommodation, and certainly I think you know, although the Solidarity Singers are quite popular in Madison and have a lot of support, I think that realistically, one would expect that a large group of people would be subject to some kind of permitting or pre-notice procedure under the Constitution. So I think it's a losing argument to say that the Constitution allows large groups a right to protest in the Capitol without any sort of pre-notice. And I think that any sort of revised rule that implements the pre-notification procedures for large groups, would be a reasonable accommodation. And I think both sides should look at that very seriously.
So, but the question seems to revolve about what is large and what that magic number is, and it seems like the fact that during the 2011 protests, for example, the fact that the Capitol safely accommodated thousands of people under those circumstances without any serious impairment of either the government's ability to function or public safety would seem to suggest that that number should be fairly large for this building and this location. Would you agree?
Well, I think what I agree is that nothing in our constitutional system is really an absolute. While small gatherings, small protests are constitutionally protected from the permit requirement, it's only because the state doesn't have any good reason to require a permit, in the sense that small groups don't increase cost, they don't increase security risk. The existing security police and the Capitol can handle two people just as well as, without any backup. But when you get into larger groups, it really does raise issues of would there need to be additional security in place? Would they need to know in advance so that they can make sure that people can get in and out of the building safely? So I think, it's all about accommodation. It's all about working together, and what this policy has been from the start has been brinksmanship and symbolic action, and people taking absolute positions. Either the Capitol needs to be closed to protesters so absolutely, so people can do their business there, versus we have an absolute right to protest, and that's just not a way to go forward productively. There needs to be accommodation on both sides.
So Markson has already dismissed another Capitol singing protest case that was on his docket, and that's the state of Wisconsin versus Bell. Do you expect other judges in the circuit court system to follow Judge Markson's lead?
I do. I think the ticketing process and the prosecution of these tickets has been a huge waste of state resources and state dollars, simply for the Walker administration and the Department of Justice to try and make a point here. I think all along, people knew these tickets were constitutionally suspect, and we've just been going through the motions and waiting for a judicial ruling to make that finding. So I expect most of these tickets to be dismissed rather quickly as a result of this ruling. As I said, it doesn't break any new ground legally. The precedent has all been there this whole time, and it's hard to argue with Judge Markson's conclusion.
So Department of Administration Secretary Mike Hipsch has already said that the state will appeal, but we haven't heard from Attorney General Van Hollen yet. Who makes that call, and how long do they have to decide whether or not to appeal Judge Markson's ruling?
The Department of Justice would make that decision in consultation with their client, which is the Department of Administration here. It would have to be made relatively soon, whether or not they're going to appeal. I have to think that We've already sunk a lot of enforcement resources into the prosecution of these tickets. Some 700, 780, I believe, had been issued. About 400 still pending. Each one of these cases has asked for a trial, which then requires a government lawyer to devote time to it, and it requires courthouse time, judges, bailiffs, et cetera. It would be surprising to me if this was appealed going forward. I think it's far more likely and would be a more productive avenue to look at these policies. Judge Markson was almost opening the door and asking the state to reexamine the administrative policies, rewrite them, and modify them in a way that would remove the constitutional problems.
So if this is appealed, does this progress through the state court, or at some point does it get into federal court because we're dealing with a First Amendment constitutional issue? How does that process work?
Well, right now it would proceed through the state court system, so it would go to the circuit court and then ultimately to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But because it involves an interpretation of the federal Constitution and the First Amendment, if the Wisconsin Supreme Court were to uphold the administrative rules and reject the constitutional claim, then appeal would be possible to the U.S. Supreme Court, because the U.S. Supreme Court is the final word on the interpretation of our federal Constitution. I would be extremely surprised if we got to that point. If there's one thing, even if you look at the federal court system, and many people talk about how the U.S. Supreme Court has become more conservative over the years due to appointments, even with that, the First Amendment is an area where federal judges are very protective of individual liberty, and I just can't see rolling the dice and pushing it that far. It just doesn't seem like a winning strategy to me.
So if Markson's ruling stands, where does that leave the sort of the situation in the Capitol? I mean, we'd have an administrative code that was declared unconstitutional by a court. What happens then?
Well, I think you cannot ticket anymore under the policy because the statute has been declared unconstitutional, and any attempt to continue to enforce it would open the state up to various arguments, you know, damages for violating people's constitutional rights intentionally. So I don't think that the state would attempt to enforce it. I think you'd see what's most likely is I think you'll see a frantic rewriting of the administrative code to try and exempt small groups from its operation more explicitly than just relying on the settlement between the two parties in the federal case. And I think you'll see a rewriting of the code, and then once we have the new provisions in place, I think lawyers for the Solidarity Singers and other groups will look carefully at it to see if the revised code is still subject to legal challenge or not.
Do you is there any risk that the state might choose to revoke the public forum status of the Wisconsin State Capitol, do you think?
The state can't do that. Once a forum has been established as a public forum, meaning a location where the public has a history, a tradition of coming and expressing themselves and expressing political views, once a public forum has been established by history and tradition, you can't really revoke it. The state doesn't have the power to turn off that access at will. So any legislation in the state assembly that attempts to do that, purports to do that, I think would be immediately subject to challenge itself. I think, you know, again, this whole process has been full of brinksmanship and posturing, supporters of the governor wanting to defend the governor's policy from any protest and cast aspersions on the protesters. The protesters being adamant in their demands that even large groups can meet in the Capitol. You know, we really need to get past the posturing on this issue. There is a way that the state capitol can remain open to the public as a forum for protest. It can continue to fulfill that proud tradition it has in our state, and both sides just need to get reasonable and understand that small groups don't need permits under the Constitution. Large groups can be required to get permits, and if they can reach an accommodation and be reasonable, then we can put all of this posturing behind us.
Thanks so much for joining us. We've been speaking with Marquette University Law School Professor Ed Filone about last week's circuit court decision declaring state capital access rules unconstitutional. Thanks again for joining us on the 8 o'clock buzz.
Been my pleasure.